I'm a witness here.
My name is Isabel. I'm 17 years old. Today is November 27th, 2020, and I'm speaking with my grandfather, Donald Zezima. We're in Stamford, Connecticut right now. Okay, Grandpa, I know that you grew up in Stamford. So who were some of the most interesting people from your childhood?
Well, there were so many people interesting from my childhood. It was Maxie Frateroli, who I knew all my life. He died about 10 years ago. There was Al Ehrlich. That was after my time in Stamford. I met him later on. But it was Maxie Frateroli, his wife Jane. I just knew a lot of people, but in looking back at it, I'm not sure who I will remember, you know.
Talk about your crazy uncle, then.
Okay.
Your uncle.
Your uncle. Mom.
I had an Uncle Sal, was my father's brother. He studied opera in Rome and studied piano in Rome. But the family always made fun of him because at Christmas time, he couldn't play with Jingle Bells or those. He can only play the famous Italian ones. But my father would say, "Don't pay much attention to my brother Sal. He's crazy." So he went down to the Metropolitan Opera. And he got a ticket, and he went in to see the opera. Now, in those days, if you didn't like the tenor, you barked. Went, "Oh, oh, oh." So he didn't like the tenor that day, and he started to bark. "Oh, oh, oh." And they threw him out of the place. So my Uncle Sal got thrown out of Metropolitan Opera several times. When he didn't like the tenor, he would bark. And you can't bark at the tenor. No. Okay. That was my father's brother. And in my father's family, there were seven of them. But one of them was your age, 17, was killed by a trolley car in New York. And my grandmother never got over that. And they went back to Italy as a result of that for 4 years. And my Uncle Sandy was actually my uncle, too. So he would be the youngest of all of them if he had lived, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. So I understand that you joined the Navy towards the end of World War II. What values did you learn after?
Well, I think it was one of the best things I did by going into the service because I was 18 years old and I went in the Navy before they had the graduation services. So I think I went in May or early May. And of course, they had all the services in June, at the end of June. But it made me think like an adult. I was 18 years old when I was shipped to California. And also, I was supposed to be in the invasion of Japan. We were training for that when the war ended. And I think I told you earlier, the admiral, his vice admiral said, "The admiral wants to speak to you, everybody." And everybody at the base had to listen to him. And he said, "The war is over." He kept repeating. The war is over. It was August 14th, 1945. And he said, the war is over. The war is over. Which meant I, as an 18-year-old, was then going to live because I wasn't going to live invading Japan. The Japanese were going to kill us. President Eisenhower estimated they would kill about a million Americans, and we'd probably kill 15 million Japanese. So Truman, President Truman, when he dropped those two bombs, I think he saved a lot of lives, and he certainly ended the war. That's one of the things I learned in the Navy.
Okay. I understand you went to law school. When did you decide or know you wanted to be a lawyer and why?
Well, my father had the restaurant called The Skipper. My brother Mike, who was older than me, worked in The Skipper. In those days, the oldest male in the Italian family joined the business that you're in. And he said to me, Donald, you're smart. Go away to school because you're going to end up in this restaurant working as a bartender or a waiter, and you're going to hate the rest of your life, which my brother Mike unfortunately did. So I went. At that time, my Uncle Pat, who was an uncle by marriage, knew people up in Boston University, and he was able to get me into Boston University. And I went through their regular college and then decided I want to go to law school. And I went to Boston University Law School. I love Boston. It was really my second city, you know. To this day, I still love Boston. Yes.
What were some of the most interesting cases you handled as a lawyer?
Well, as you heard me say earlier, I did sue Lindbergh's. I sued the New York Times on a libel action on behalf of two Stanford policemen named Hogan and Maloney. And if you look at the record books, they show Hogan and Maloney versus the New York Times. And it was one of the few times in 100 years that anybody ever beat the New York Times. And I beat them in New Haven at federal court. And they took an appeal to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York, which is one of the top court of appeals in the whole country. And I won there 2-1. One judge voted against me, but two voted with me. And the Times then didn't go any further with it. But I was able to beat the New York Times, but I had many, many interesting cases.
Chimp.
You know, the Chimp case was a very famous case. I knew the Chimp when it was a baby, and he used to come into the office when it was maybe a year old. And the owner would dress him up just like he'd dress a little boy. And he would come in dressed like a little boy, Travis. And Travis was great until he got to be older. When he got to be 14, he was heavy and he was very strong. And he attacked that woman, tore her hands off and tore her nose off and everything. But she lived through it. But that was Travis. And of course, I had a lot of famous cases. One was, and I can say this, I suppose, one was involved a widow of Orton Motter, who had formed a automobile company at that time in competition with General Motors and stuff. But she got tied up. She was his widow. Got tied up with the guy next door who was a con artist. And every time he would come over to see her, they would have relations. and he'd get money out of her. So we ended up suing him, and we were able to get all of her money back. But there are many, many cases where, you know, if I went over with you, you would be surprised by them, you know.
I know that you ran for state senate in Connecticut. Why did you choose to do this, and what was your campaign?
I ran 1968 because in those days, if you were head of the party, which I was, and you couldn't get anybody to run, you had to run yourself. So I ran and didn't do that bad. I almost won. But I think that was a presidential election, if I'm not mistaken, 1968.
Yes.
Yeah. Who was it? Humphrey, I think, ran. Anyway, Bill Hickey, who later became a judge, was the state senator at the time. So I ran against him. But I still remember, I still have some of the things used to put on cars. But it was 1968. Yes. Yeah.
Dad, do you have a charger here?
Lucas, I know that you ran the campaign for Nixon in Connecticut also. Why did you decide to do this?
Well, I didn't run it in Connecticut. I ran it in Stamford, the area, Fairfield County. I liked Nixon at the time, and he was running against Kennedy, who I didn't like. And if you remember, it was a very close election. Kennedy won it by taking Illinois, but almost didn't. Nixon almost won that election. But as a result of that, I had a lot of pictures downstairs with Nixon on the wall.
No, that was from 68, Dan.
When he ran against Kennedy, that's when I ran. I met Mommy.
I know, but those pictures downstairs.
Yeah, the pictures downstairs are from when he won as a candidate for president. Yeah.
How did you feel when Watergate broke?
At the time, I felt like everybody did. There was nothing to it, and it was just a minor thing. But then as things went along, they found out that Nixon had tapes in which he lied on the tapes, and then he hid the tapes away, and that started the downfall of Nixon. Was, if you remember, was elected by a big margin only a few months before it happened, before Watergate happened, yeah. But otherwise, Watergate, most of it was a small thing until it exploded. Then it came in all the papers and everything, you know.
Did you regret joining his campaign, or did you value the experience?
What was that?
Do you regret joining his campaign, or do you value the experience?
I value the experience. You couldn't get it anywhere like I got it. Yeah.
I understand that you were a police commissioner at one point. How'd you get the job, and did you like it?
I loved it. What happened? Tom Mayers. Was Bell, M-A-Y-E-R-S, ran for mayor in 1963. And I became very close to him. In fact, we had the same birthday. And when he won, he said to me, do you want to go on a safety board? At that time, the safety board was composed of the police commission and the fire commission. It was a three-man board which covered both fire department and police department. And for the final It was for 2 years each term. For the final term, I was the chairman of the police commission and the fire commission. And I loved it. I would do it again in a minute. Yeah.
Since you had so many interesting jobs, did you ever have any near-death experiences?
Any what?
Near-death experiences from all your jobs?
Oh, yeah. You know, I had... There was a while I was doing a lot of criminal work, and I never really had a murderer I represented, but I represented so many people who were involved in assaults and batteries and things like that. And I myself was threatened many times as a lawyer by people that maybe weren't too happy with the result that came out of. Oh, yeah. And one of the things which I've written about is we were living in this house, and we had passed over for a promotion one of the policemen who finished first on the list. We had a choice of the first three on the list. And when he came up, he was, he could pass tests, but he was a terrible policeman. Very, very bad. So, but he came in number one on the test, and we passed him over. And then a month later, another vacancy developed, and we passed him over again. So on the night in question, after having passed over twice, he drove up here at about 9 o'clock. It was raining, it was a dark night. And he used a police car, but he had a gun naturally with him, and he had the shallop, the leather thing open. And at that time, of course, all you had was a regular telephone. You had no telephones like today. So he said to Mommy, I want you to come in the room. And then he said to me, why'd you pass me over? So try to explain that to somebody when you know that they're not up to date mentally. So... I thought he was going to kill me, naturally, and Mommy and all the kids. Because he just kept very solemn about it. But finally, at the end of the night, he said, I'm going to leave you because I promised we were going to look at him again after... doctors had looked him over. I didn't say to him psychiatrists, but doctors. And a month later, he committed suicide, pulled his brains out. So it's one of my favorite famous cases.
I understand that you met Grandma pretty late in your life. How'd you meet her, and how'd you get her to go on your first date?
Well, I was 34, and she was 23. And she came up here to teach at Low Hayward, which was a private school. And she was a Republican from Texas. In those days, Texas had very few Republicans. So the women at Republican headquarters were always looking for a woman for me because I was one of their favorites. And so she walks in, beautiful young woman, and the girls at the Republican headquarters said to me, you have to meet this girl from Texas. She's beautiful, she speaks well, she's gonna teach up here. So I went every night for about a week, she wasn't there. Finally, she showed up, and I took one look at her and said, "This is it." I felt like a load of bricks, and talking to her a couple of times, and she told me how every young guy in the city was taken to restaurants. So I said, "I'd like to take you out, but I want to take you to a racetrack." And so I did. I took her to a racetrack, and she loved it, you know, compared to restaurants. So after that, I took her to a racetrack again, and then we became an item. We were very close. And I think I started to say earlier, she then went home for Christmas for a month. And she said to me, "Don't you call me and I won't call you. If I come back from Christmas, we'll get married. If I don't come back, that's the end. I'll stay in Texas and we won't see each other again." Yeah. And she came back and called me, and I picked up the phone, and that was it. Yeah.
I know that you have three daughters. What were some of the most important traits you instilled in them?
Well, I remember Carolyn at my, I think it was my 65th birthday. She was over 20 at the time anyway. And she got up and she said, "You know, my father has three daughters and he's an Italian. But he treats us like we were men and we could talk and do what we wanted to do and we could make our way in life without being feminine or masculine." And we did. And they turned out pretty good, all three of them. Yeah.
What were your grandparents like?
My grandparents were nice people. I had two sets of grandparents. In those days, you revered your grandparents more than we do today. On my father's side, my grandmother was a Canetta. And in Santa Fe, the Canettas were the highest you could get. One of my uncles claimed that in 1400, the Canettas were Jewish and came over from Turkey. But anyway, she was Santa Fe days. And my grandfather, believe it or not, when he died, I went to the funeral and then later saw that he was born in 1865, July 3rd, the same day we had, Gettysburg, and which surprised me because it means that in this day and age, I knew somebody was born in the American Civil War. And then my mother had beautiful parents. One of them worked in the post office, and that was a big thing in those days, to get a job in a post office. And my grandmother lived to be 90, I think, and she was nice. Whenever my mother went to the hospital and got sick, she came over and took care of us. Yes. Those are my grandparents.
How would you like to be remembered?
I'd like to be remembered as a stern, good father who raised the kids the right way. And so far, I've done a pretty good job, I think. And looking at it, that everybody was raised right. They didn't turn out perfect, don't get me wrong. No one's perfect. But they turned out to be good, and their grandchildren turned out to be good. Yes. That's it.
And then I know that music was a big part of your life.
Oh, yeah.
So what's your favorite song, and could you sing some of it?
Probably September's song. For it's a long, long time. From May to December. And the days grow short when you reach September and the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame. One hasn't got time for the waiting game. I can't hit the high notes where I used to. And the days dwindle down to a precious few. September, November, and how did it end up? And
December?
September, November. Oh, and these few precious days I'll spend with you. That's September song.
Why is that your favorite song?
It just it's hit me through the years. And I just, when I was younger, I used to be able to hit the real high notes. So if I wanted, I would say, you know, and the days have been down way up. On the other hand, there's a lot of songs I love. I can't do it anymore, but at one time I would say I remembered the words to 1,000 songs. Everything that you heard, I knew the words to. Yeah. Now I can't remember them all.
I know that you wrote a memoir. When is it coming out?
Well, it's not really. A memoir, I had a woman who was helping me with it, and she said, you got to have a minimum of 250 pages before a company will publish you. And I've only gotten up to about 100 pages, and it's been 3 years or more since I lifted a finger. If I ever get the ambition, I suppose I could finish it if I live long enough. But my memoirs now are 14 memoirs. Some came out very good, but I have not, as I say, done some parts of my life which would have been very good and as a memoir. For example, I beat the New York Times, but that's not one of the memoirs that I did, you know? Yeah.
What was your favorite memoir that you wrote?
Might have been the Times. What happened is there was a crab game that used to occupy all the sidewalks down the South Pacific area of the city. And for years, they couldn't make it up because every time they saw a police car, they broke up the game. Until Hogan and Maloney came along. And Hogan said, you know what? I can get a flower truck and we'll load it up with policemen. And when we pull up alongside the game, they won't run and break it up because they'll see a flower truck. So that's what happened. He got a flower truck. They pull up. They made a bunch of arrests. but the local writer made a joke out of it. He said, as the prisoners went in the front of the truck, they went at the back of the truck. And that was not true. He never did any investigation. And so what happened, the New York Times saw it and made a front page article on it. It was on the front page of the New York Times, but it had the prisoners getting in front and running out the back. So we sued the New York Times for defamation. And it was called Hogan and Maloney. Hogan was a cop, and Maloney, versus the New York Times. And the guy from the Times was one of the big law firms in the state. And I was only maybe a year and a half out of law school, and I got a call from the lawyer representing the Times, and he said, I'll let you withdraw the case and won't hold you to it, but you got 24 hours to make up your mind. And I told him, go kiss my ass. And we ended up trying the case, and we beat the New York Times. Yeah.
Okay, so last question, since it was just Thanksgiving, and I know that's one of your favorite holidays, what's your favorite part about Thanksgiving?
Just to be here, sitting, watching my family enjoy themselves, and enjoying myself. And the food was so good, it was unbelievable. That's why, to me, that's the nicest holiday of the year. Beats Christmas and all the rest of them. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for this interview, Grandpa.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry. I couldn't think of everything, but...
Oh, no, you did great. Yeah. Thank you.